A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Word is out, they're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler, won't say it twice cause we're already.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 729, Magical Mike.
Last. I'm trying to think of, like, just all of the different part three titles.
Yeah.
A new, no, 3D, Magic, wow, that's a very different movie.
Wow, it's 4, yeah. 4D is where it really excels.
I guess that's true, yeah.
Now you can smell Magic Mike.
You get splashed with Channing Tatum's sweat.
Yeah, sweat? That's
hey, well, that's where I went with it. I mean, yeah. If you want to go somewhere else with it, that's fine.
Getting warm in here already. Let me take this one.
I do. Getting us all tickets to the gun show.
That's right.
So I guess let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And joining us via the magic of ZoomTube from Binge Movies, it's Jason. Hey, Jason, how's it going?
I'm definitely ill, but I wouldn't miss this opportunity for anything. I'm going to have to modulate myself down a little bit. One, because I sound like... Thanks for having me on to ruin your podcast. And two, because I usually deal in explicit vulgarity, and this is more of an innuendo podcast, and we're talking about hogs and hog meat and beef boys, so I'm going to have to be careful.
Well, we appreciate your caution.
Yeah, I mean, since we worked that deal with all the elementary schools to go into their announcement TV and everything.
You picked the wrong guy for the pilot project to go in elementary schools.
Channel 1? No.
I went to Catholic schools. We didn't have TVs.
I went to Catholic school, too.
And you had a TV in there?
Hell yeah.
We didn't have TVs in our
network. Was that a network for
schools? Yeah, it was like a high school news network.
We had one TV in the whole school.
We had TVs in every room.
It was black and white.
Mm-hmm. Was it? It was.
It,
it
only
was like
showed kinescopes.
I'll say it was 900 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had just invented TV. To
right.
Be fair. So, I mean,
no. It only showed Myrtle the Talking Donkey or Teapot Kettle or whatever you talk about all the time. What's that show you talk about all the time, Tom?
Mr. Ed.
No, it's a donkey. Some donkey show he used to watch.
Francis the Talking Mule.
I think you watched the wrong Magic Mike.
Francis the Talking Mule. Yeah, there it is.
The New Zoo
Magic
Review?
Mike 4 is where the Tijuana
New
donkey
Zoo Review show. Is the one that none of us know what it is, but Tom talks about it.
It's nightmare fuel, man. Go look it up on YouTube.
No, we absolutely had a TV in every room.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are we going to get the Channing Tatum Francis the Talking Mule crossover?
Magic Mike 4.
I would love that.
Yep.
I mean, Channing Tatum's with funny in The Right Thing.
He's not bad in this.
Yeah.
Comparatively,
we'll get into that.
Yeah. So let's shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you find a podcast, you can find us. While you're there, follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. That's always helpful and appreciated. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. It's called the League of Show Shares because we're hoping you'll share an episode. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week include Gabriel Lugo, Glenn Cougar, Melon Brewer, Chris Magic Man, Phil Timon, Phil Timon. I'm saying it twice because I missed him last week.
Perfect. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah.
Ralph Tribble, Tammy Lynn Powers, Betts, Travis Tewitt, Chris Valls, Julianne Jordan, Josh Rosen, Dissect That Film, Laura Connolly Quiddick, Christopher Rex, Heather Sachs, Braid 1991, David Rojas, Ronnie Castle, Chris Williams, Mike and Oscar, Geek to Me Radio, Feel and Film, Collateral Cinema, In Session Film, Binge Movies.
Hey, skirted the Brad Hyen rule.
Yeah,
wrote the rule, week, baby.
No, yeah. Dissect Film, Ryan Terry, Invasion of the Remake, and Minorities Report. So thank you very much.
Some new ones in there.
Yeah, there's a couple of new ones on there. Right. Thank you very much for sharing an episode. We greatly appreciate it. Also, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content. And we like you extra.
Yeah. By the time this airs, Halloween ends. We'll be on there. So finish the great debate.
That's right. We took a little bit of a break to give Kevin some time to catch up. We had a bunch. I realized that we had done like.
I didn't know that Patreon was a weekly show. Holy cow.
We did like four or five of them. And then Kevin's like, can you chill for a second? I was like, oh, yeah, sorry.
Like, pump the brakes.
So, how many attempts at convincing the world that Halloween Ends is a good movie you're going to give Joe?
As many
enough
as
well, enough. Enough is enough,
is, I will say, this is this the Patreon. If you subscribe to the Patreon, this will be the last time.
That's like him promising, this is my last wrestling reference.
Yeah.
I will never
Kevin
mention
has had to
again.
Edit you talking about Halloween Ends.
I got the notification, I didn't know they were doing it, and I get something in my inbox for Halloween Ends. I'm like, what year is this? Did I wake up in some kind of time?
Matt wanted to talk about it, and I jumped at the opportunity to talk about it again.
Oh, so dear. Matt's to blame. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, he's not in the room, so yes, Matt's to blame.
He's out of the rotation.
Speaking of Matt, I'm officially here to usurp his position as the fourth and official. I want to be the Virgil of the NWO that is Real Spoilers. Only what's his face will get that reference.
The Vincent.
I want to be the Vincent, yes.
Right.
I want to quit my show and only show up occasionally on Real Spoilers. That's the goal.
We have a very special test, and it's called the rotation test, and you have to pass it, so
guess we'll see.
I've listened to that episode, and I don't get that joke. Sorry. I've never understood the joke.
The rotation?
Yeah. There you go. I guess you already know your answer then, huh?
Oh, man.
So
how about you just call me every time Joe doesn't show up?
Hey,
well, it's not often.
Yeah, I was like, he's
gonna get right here. He might not always be punctual.
Jason's going to start dumping tacks in front of Joe's car as long as
he's going to fly all the way to St. Louis.
Oh, yeah.
Sabotage.
I'm going to put him
through
a flaming table.
Happily.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly
chair shot right to the back. Yeah.
You clearly overestimated the importance of this podcast.
Yeah.
So, Magic Mike.
Man, so, okay. So, 3D. Before we get started, I'm watching this movie, the only one in the theater. I think is hilarious.
We were both the only guy in the theater.
I was the only person.
Right, but means you were the only guy.
Oh, then yeah, that's true. Yeah. I guess that's fair.
My theater was packed.
Really?
Oh, but yeah. I was the only one under 50.
Oh, that's interesting.
I went during the, it was Saturday, yesterday, weekend, during the day, and it was mostly all women.
Okay.
And there were two dudes, I guess, along with their perspective
ladies
counterpart, yeah. And yeah, but the theater was packed.
No, that was the only person.
Well, I think that was the only packed theater from what I read.
Well,
no,
so do you know this is limited release?
I went to the pre-screening. Mm-hmm. All women, sold out, hanging from the rafters, everybody working up a lather, only dude. And
how many numbers do you get afterwards?
How many mom phone numbers did I get afterwards?
Hey.
I was masked up, coughing, sneezing, and sweating profusely from probably some kind of fever. I think I had diphtheria.
They just thought you were having a hot flash.
Yeah.
Nothing out of the ordinary.
Like, no, I sat way in the front row down the hall.
Yeah.
I sat completely away from everybody, but I had this wall of reaction behind me, which I think buoyed the film because they were loving it. They loved every minute of this movie.
Interesting.
Especially that opening, boy. And I can't say that I disagree. Yeah, I'm a mama. Hoochie coochie.
This movie is bad.
It's real bad. It's real bad.
So it's not as bad as the second one, which was a complete cash grab.
Oh, I disagree. I thought the second one, this movie was not fun. There was no fun in this movie. And then they jettisoned the entire cast. That's a cash grab.
Sort of. They throw them on for the worst Zoom call I've ever seen.
That was really weird.
Yeah.
First of all, the whole cast that you expect some at least will return, and then to make it so choppy.
When I see Kevin Nash literally sitting in his car, he's like, you know, Steven Soderbergh's like, hey, man, I need you for like 5 minutes.
Right.
He's like, well, I've got time between a wrestling appearance and a podcast.
Joe loves wrestling enough to know that, like, that's Kevin Nash's actual car.
Well, and you know, Joe, you know that Nash favored Nation his contract, too. So, you know, he probably got like $10 million for that Zoom call.
That's a deep cut wrestling reference that nobody's going to get. Yeah.
Please don't explain it.
Basically,
what the Google is for.
So a little backstory. This movie was an HBO Max exclusive.
Oh.
They popped in 1,500 theaters. So it's a limited release, and that's why I couldn't find any AMC times.
Oh, okay.
So it's literally limited release because, you know, the new guy, Zaslav, is like, we're going to make every cent we can. All the straight to HBO Max stuff that was planned before he got there, he's thrown it into theaters. And so whatever, they didn't do wide release for whatever reason.
Which I think is smart. As much as this guy is, I mean, we've been saying this forever. Like, why aren't you throwing these in theaters?
Right,
getting the revenue and then putting it on HBO Max, I mean, even 30 days later.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the canceling stuff is obviously just ridiculous that he does. But stuff that's already made to write it off or whatever. But you're right. I mean, you're making this feature film with a cast and a crew that are reputable. I mean, it's not like it's any lesser quality. Like, why would you not throw it in the theaters?
It's not like an American Pie sequel with only Eugene
Levy. Eugene
Levy
or Jennifer Coolidge.
Right.
So it makes sense. So that is why, because I messaged Tom and I'm like, I got to go see this thing in the next couple of days. I've only got so many openings.
And then I was like, oh, we should do it for the episode this week.
Yeah. Man,
you're going to see it anyway.
I was like, can we do anything else? Like, there's got to be something else.
But there was nothing. But AMC Theater had, all the Oscar stuff from last year.
Oh.
And I'm just like, how do you not have a new Magic Mike movie? Like, it's a big enough movie where I think they could at least throw it on a screen. But I guess, again, the limited rollout, I don't know how they selected it. But
Draft House had it in one theater but was playing throughout
the day.
But at least,
in one theater. So it's just weird that if they're going to put it out, I don't know, with digital distribution, right? It's not like they're like, well, we got to make all the prints and send the guys. Like, I don't get why you would throw something in 1,500 instead of 4,500, but I really don't get it. But anyway, so it's a limited thing. It was a straight to streaming, so they ended up reworking the deal like they're doing with some other HBO stuff. But to me, like, the first one's a great movie. And
I like the first one. I stick up for it all the time. Yeah. That movie works. And I've said forever, that movie definitely follows the beats of Saturday Night Fever.
Sure.
Whereas one follows the beats of Staying Alive.
There you go.
That's true.
But you can go listen to Binge Movies. Jason had me on to talk about Magic Mike, so I had to return the favor and have him on for Magic Mike 3. But I defend...
That's you returning the favor for Magic Mike 3?
Yeah.
I feel like Jason
and I had to watch Magic Mike XXL.
Oh, to be
because
the
I
lore.
Never saw it.
Okay,
and that was and to figure out how do we get from here to here?
You don't.
I cannot believe that I'm on a podcast with you three guys, and you're sitting here dumping on a movie that opens with a 15-minute simulated sex scene.
Look,
with Salma Hayek,
that fully clothed.
What is wrong with you people?
I haven't seen dry humping that severe since middle school.
Oh, like, it's pure dry humping. But I'm watching it. I'm in public. I feel like a pervert. I'm with everybody's moms. I thought that is Steven Soderbergh is like, I want to make a step up movie with an iPhone.
I got to tell you,
with Salma Hayek, and that's what he made. And that's what this is.
I'm watching.
And I thought it was so fun. Like, I enjoyed it. I liked it for what it was.
That scene is fine, right?
But that's one of three Magic Mike scenes.
There's like so little dancing, and then he does almost no dancing.
Yeah.
And
do you remember how much time in the first movie, Tom, Magic Mike spends trying to sell ecstasy or trying to get the kid to stop selling ecstasy?
Yes, why
so little stripping? The marketing for the Magic Mike series is watch Channing Tatum swing his ding dong and watch these guys.
Well,
watch these guys take their hogs out. But if you actually watch the movie, because Kevin watched it with me, and watching XXL, there's the same amount of stripping in this as there is in the other. Now, with the exception of at one point when they finally are showing this off Broadway musical in England. They do a montage over all the dancing.
Right. It's like, it's the Cannonball Run 2 of male stripping movies, where at the end they just showed a car chase with an animated car on a map. Right. It's like, but your whole thing is about cars. And so the first Magic Mike movie is, it is like Saturday Night Fever in that people misremember what that movie is, right? They get so focused on the dancing that they forget that it's kind of a dark, sad movie, right? And
it's a really good movie.
But it's really good.
It's really good.
And Saturday Night Fever is the same way. Like, that movie's really bleak, right? There's suicide. There's rape. Yeah. There's, I mean, it's a dark movie. And then in the second one, they're like, okay, you just want to see the hot guys dancing. Fine. Yeah. Give it to them, right? Yeah, and I'm like, okay, this is a bad movie, but it's there's,
didn't we cover it?
I think so.
I think we did.
During Misbegotten Sequels?
No, I think didn't we bring the wives
a regular
on?
Yeah, it was a regular episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe you weren't on it.
Oh, no, no. I mean Saturday Night Fever or Staying Alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Misbegotten.
It was Misbegotten sequel, okay. So like the second one's not good, but like it's like, "Oh, we're just going to play the hits. People want to see the dancing, we're going to give you the dancing with a modicum of plot." So the second one is Bad News Bears Breaking Training, right? That's they're all exactly. in a van, they're driving across the country.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, there's so little dancing.
But this third one
is a
Save
the Teen Center movie from the 80s is what it is. If they had to save the theater, like, oh my gosh, we're running out of money. We have to save this historic theater.
I'll do you one better. This is Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland. Like, hey kids, let's put on a show. Like,
oh, sure.
Yeah. But
you know what? Kevin Brackett has converted me to the Magic Mike franchise because I'm now a fan of all of these movies.
See?
And I, as a pro wrestling fan, I love watching beefed up guys oil themselves up and writhe around. And the fact that Joe pretends he's uncomfortable watching this.
There's nothing
in this movie that he doesn't watch Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday.
It's Monday and it's Wednesday. And maybe
and Friday. You're following that bloodline storyline.
I'll catch on demand.
Maybe.
It's a YouTube highlight
reading. It's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday. Thank you very much.
It's the same thing, though, right? It's soap opera. It's drama. To me, I went into this. I saw hardly any trailers for it. I'm watching the movie. I feel the excitement of the crowd. And again, that buoyed me and buoyed my experience. But I'm immediately realizing, oh, this is a Save the Teen Center movie. This is breaking. This is an 80s movie. This is a throwback. Steven Soderbergh, and it ends up being a step-up movie. Steven Soderbergh went back to Channing Tatum's roots and is like, it's a step-up movie where we never learn the names of any of the characters in the dance troupe. They don't have any names. They don't have any personalities. They're found in a montage. They hump a bunch of hot women, a bunch of hot dudes humping hot women. That's the end of the movie.
And they perform in a montage.
Yeah, everything's in a montage. And for that, it's like, okay, it's great. Selma Hayek's holy.
Selma Hayek is unbelievable.
Unreal in this movie.
Yeah. Like, sure.
Her body was made by the Unreal Engine, Tom. Yeah. This woman is 50-something years old.
She's 56.
56.
It's 56. It's unbelievable.
It's unreal.
What was the first movie she was in?
I remember seeing her in Mexico. Desperado.
Was it Desperado was the first? Because I remember Desperado, but I didn't know if she had done anything
Desperado From Dusk Till Dawn. Yeah. Like the
first
thing
I remember was Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Is she in El Mariachi or was she...
No, just Desperado.
No, Desperado. And then she was in... I think those are the two that people were just like, excuse me, who are you? And she became a megastar. And it's funny, I was talking to my wife before I left, and she's like, what happened to her? Like, where did she go? And I was like, she must have married some dude. And, like, that was it. Like, and then she looked up, she's like, she married some businessman. That's what his job says, is businessman.
He's like, a fashion guy. He's a multi-billionaire.
That's exactly. Yeah. And now she can do a Magic Mike 3.
But she's in The Eternals.
That's true.
So, I mean, she still pops up
and stuff.
That's
my point, though, is, like, she can... she's almost like Daniel Radcliffe at this point.
But she's been working for, I mean, think of when Desperado was in the 90s. Like, 94? She's
and look, Selma Hayek looks amazing, but Hollywood isn't clamoring for 56-year-old starlets.
That's true.
Well,
right?
She's in those Hitman's Bodyguard's Wife's movies.
She's been on several streaming
directed Apple Plus shows that nobody watches. She's the star in a couple of those. So,
but she's really good. She looks great. Obviously, it's amazing that she looks as good, if not better, than the 90s.
This plays like fan fiction. Like, oh, Magic Mike falls in love with a woman 15 years his senior.
Exactly. Tom. This movie is a pure fantasy. It's a fantasy for divorce or divorcing women that you're going to be able to get a hot 40-year-old, right?
And
it's a fantasy for white 40-year-old dudes whose none of their dreams worked out, which is me.
Selma Hayek
with an endless supply of cash is going to roll into town. You're going to be a bum in her house, and she's going to be like,
but this storyline makes no sense.
Let me give you less than six figures to me down. Joe, if Selma Hayek gave you $60,000 to sleep with her, would you not do it? Come on.
Are you kidding me? She gave me $6.
If Selma Hayek said, get on this private jet, I'm taking you to a faraway land for no apparent reason.
I do have a family I have to think about.
I would abandon all family, friends, religious conviction, and I would get on that plane. You can take me to Istanbul. I don't care where we're going.
I felt like this movie needed to steer into, because it's like, because Steven Soderbergh's back directing, so it has this kind of art house feel sometimes.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
And it needed to steer into this woman's clear mental illness.
Sure.
Like, she's desperately mentally ill. Bipolar, yes, or something. There's something going on with this woman. Like, yeah, the wiring's not right.
When she starts yelling at him in the back of that car,
yeah,
because he was like, hey, I just want to make sure we're good.
I was very triggered. I'm like, this is my first marriage.
I bet you
were. Except she didn't look like Selma Hayek.
Maybe if she did, you'd be like, I think with a little bit extra.
I think Selma Hayek at some point is like, you think I'm crazy or something, and Katie turns to me and she goes, she's crazy.
She's crazy. Like, there's this whole scene where they're in the back of this limo and she makes a move on him, and Channing Tatum is like, hey, I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
He's
here.
He's literally just seeking enthusiastic with consent, right? Like, that's all.
And she's like, what?
She's about to duck and roll out of the car.
Like, and the look on his face, I was like, no, man, you gotta go.
She's like, hey, I'm Gen X. You dive in and you hope you got it right. That's how it works.
And I just picture, you know, he's like, man, I'm going to end up on Dateline. Like, this is going to be
all right.
They don't do this anymore.
Oh, they don't?
They don't do the To Catch a Predator anymore. Oh, people started killing themselves.
Too bad.
And Chris Hansen still does it on YouTube out of his own apartment. It's called Have a Seat.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
and
right.
And he sells beer koozies and merchandise.
Chris Hansen has his own
issues
because he was apparently like writing bad checks and like
I got to tell you, you write a bad check compared to the guy trying to solicit sexual favors.
Oh, not putting him on the same level. No,
he's
just saying
like he ended up with a whole lot of issues with money.
Okay.
Oh, he didn't write a bad check for a carton of milk, Joe. He wrote several bad checks covering thousands
rent.
And thousands.
I heard he wrote bad checks for Magic Mike 3 tickets.
Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do. But I will say, I'm glad you brought up Steven Soderbergh, because I'm sitting here watching this and I was like, man, is there somebody trying to do a faux Steven Soderbergh the entire time? And then it gets to the end and I was like, wow.
But this
is Steven Soderbergh.
Have you looked at his filmography, though? This is the guy who directed Ocean's 13. Like, you guys are talking about Soderbergh. Those Ocean's movies, I think, are fantastic.
You got to pay for a lot of your art house stuff, you know?
We've talked about him before, is that he kind of got into the one for me, one for you
kind of
thing. So I think this must have been the one for you.
I think he likes exploring these characters. It's not. Yeah,
I wish he had.
Yeah.
Like, right?
No, he didn't direct
the
second one, but he wrote, shot, and edited the second one. This is his passion project. Yeah. He helps produce the live show.
Wait, he wrote, shot, and edited the second one, too?
He's a cinematographer of the second Magic Mike.
Okay.
And
does it look like a Soderbergh movie?
I don't even remember anymore.
They all look the same.
Like a cash room. Let me interject here real quick. I'm surprised you feel this way, Tom. Seriously, because this to me felt like a return closer to what they were doing in the first
one. It felt like someone trying to emulate the first one. And like, there are scenes, there are moments, especially at the beginning, I was like, it's got that more handheld camera thing. And I was like, oh, maybe this is going to be a thing. And I was even on board for like the first big dance and the ridiculous setup. But then the longer it goes on, like, the dumber it gets. And I really thought, maybe the payoff is it's going to be kind of a head fake. Like, they're going to make you think we're doing this, hey, kids, let's put on a show thing. And then they're going to pivot and be like, that's insane what this woman is trying to do. And she's not right in the head. And then the third act's going to be about, like, surprise, this has actually been a serious movie about mental illness. And, like, but it's not.
No, the
premise is just because I think we're going to have a lot of people watching this that aren't going to bother to watch the movie.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
So the premise is she meets Magic Mike. He's whatever business he started at the end of the first one. The pandemic has killed it. He's bartending. She's a rich socialite doing some sort of charity thing. He's a bartender at this party. And she's like, you're hot. You should put it in me. And and so then he does this big, ginormous dance scene. Hope you enjoy it, because he's going to have to tide you over for the next hour and 40 minutes.
Before you see him ever again. Well, see him without a shirt on.
Yeah. So then she's like, I'm super rich. I'm getting divorced. let's go to London and piss off my husband.
And the fact that he would do it without any details. He doesn't ask any, what am I going to be doing? I mean, it's just,
well, I think to some degree he doesn't have.
I got to tell you,
I do agree with Jason
here, is that this, we know that he has nothing going on.
He's got nothing going on.
And if Selma Hayek says.
Well, hang on.
No, you guys are missing two plot points here. Plot point number one is her lawyer for this foundation is one of the girls from the sorority with the ecstasy party from the first movie. Same actor, same character.
Yeah.
She recognizes him as a stripper and is like, hey, you're a divorced woman who's like kind of going bonkers.
That's how she knows that.
I like that.
That's how Salma Hayek knows that he's really a
this military. Guy should give you a dance and lift your spirits or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's how that gets hooked up. Two, he is ducking his friends, who are not characters in this movie, from the first two films, the Kings of Tampa, because they invested in his business.
His furniture
business. He owes them a bunch of money.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the reason why he takes this crazy job is because, to Joe's point, he has nothing going on. And two, he feels guilty because he took all this money these guys had from their successful, you know, show or whatever, which they don't have a lot of money to speak, you know. He took a lot of their money that they don't have to give.
But are they just trying to turn Mike into a saint? Like, they're like, bro, it's cool. It's called an investment. It didn't work out. And it's like,
you didn't steal our money.
Yeah, I mean, it's just weird that they make the character feel like, are you, like you're supposed to put him up like, what an incredible human being. Like,
but
dude,
remember the end of the first movie? Where the whole thing is about him saving money so he doesn't have to be a stripper. And he covers the debt of the guy who screwed him over in the entire movie. That's Mike's character. He's the hooker with a heart of gold.
No, he is a good person. I'm just saying, like, the guys are like, dude, it's called an investment. They they let him off the hook. I thought it was really odd that I didn't see any of the trailers either. I didn't know they were going to London. I'm like, this is bizarre. I had no idea what this movie was about. And then I'm like, well, where are the other guys? And they just have them pop up on his cell phone as names. And I'm like, what? Like, are they not going to be in this? Oh, but when he's overseas, he goes on a Zoom call. Is this a commercial for Zoom? Because I'm telling you.
I hope not.
I mean, our video looks better than this major motion picture with Zoom. And then it's like the choppiest. I'm guessing they all filmed their stuff separately and they had to slow it down and chop it up to make it sync.
Yeah,
they didn't
have
enough footage.
That makes sense.
It had to be because
it is also funny. This is Kevin Nash, who I think in the first movie, right, had the long hair, big beard. He knew that his hair was going.
That's Tarzan.
Okay. So he cut it all off to look like a normal human being. And I do think it's hilarious that in this one, they're like, no, just leave it short. Like, I have to believe that he's like, I'm filming this in my car. I'm not putting on a wig.
Right.
I'm not doing any of that.
Pecan?
He's like, you can deal with like my short, normal looking haircut. And it's just like, oh, Kev. Like, I mean, he's hopefully got paid.
I'm sure he did.
I can't believe that I'm on this show as the defender of the Magic Quest.
It's a bad movie. Well, I can't believe it is.
I didn't think I was going to be the defender because I didn't think it was anywhere near as good as the first one, but I thought it was leaps and bounds over the second.
I think the
second one is fun. I think because here's the thing. I didn't watch the first one until I knew there was a second one. And that was my reason for not liking it on binge movies because I was like, this whole thing is a drama about can this guy get out of this lifestyle? And the second movie is he goes right back to that lifestyle to go have fun in Myrtle Beach.
I couldn't believe I had to sit there and defend Magic Mike 1. I seriously like had this throwdown argument with Jason. I'm like, how this movie's so good?
First Magic Mike is
to me it killed the tension of the narrative because I know he's obviously not going to get out. And the we don't want him out because we want to see him hang dog.
You see this with movies that shouldn't have had sequels all the time, right? Like they resolve the conflict in the first one.
Jaws.
Yep.
As you go to make the next one, people want to see that specific conflict, so you have to come up with some plot device that completely undermines what happened in the first movie so you can still have that conflict.
Yeah.
I think the second one is a lot of fun, and I think this one is a weird semi-sad fever dream somewhere in between the first and second.
But like the stuff that Mike's
kind of fun, but ultimately, I think some of the choreography in this that we actually isn't montaged over is great.
There's great choreography when they give it to you,
right?
Great.
But you know, another franchise I think that does this, even though it's very popular and people love it, is Rocky.
Sure,
right?
First
Rocky movie is perfect, and the whole point of that movie is you can win without winning.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
and then after that, he just wins and wins and wins.
He doesn't win in three.
He loses a lot throughout
but
those
no, he
movies,
doesn't, though.
Doesn't he?
He loses, but he always wins.
He loses in one. He wins in two. He loses and wins in three.
Because then the paradigm or the the motif is that he loses the first fight,
right,
and then he has to build back up to have the comeback at the end of the movie.
Actually, watching Creed 2...
It's only happened once, Tom. It only happens in Rocky 3. He doesn't fight.
Okay, but he has a loss because in Rocky 4, he watches Apollo get killed.
Correct.
Yes, right. That's correct.
It is interesting in Creed 2 when they kind of do their own version of that, where Drago gets DQ'd in that first fight. So, like, he doesn't lose... But he obviously does lose.
Right.
It was an interesting little like way to get around that, 5.
And then Rocky 5 is Magic Mike's last dance because he spends the whole movie not fighting.
That's exactly it. Until the very end.
Until the very end.
He loses in Rocky Balboa. Mm-hmm. He does not win that fight in Rocky Balboa.
Yeah.
And then we're done.
Yeah.
And now then he fights cancer and wins
but
that
so
one
in
too.
This, but
well,
this,
we'll see.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
But what I like about all three of these movies in the trilogy is they're not just about stripping. They're not just an excuse to have the dances. Sure, there's a lot of it sprinkled throughout, but you see Mike actually grow and mature as a character. And in this movie, as the final chapter in the trilogy and 10 years later, you see a lot of growth, I think, for Mike. And when they're not dancing, which there's very few of, it was a lot about him dealing with his issues.
Well, I will say,
I thought it was interesting.
The first one might be the greatest marketing ploy I've ever seen in a movie, right? Because they market that movie as a male stripping movie.
Right.
And you have Matthew McConaughey, who I think at that point was like tippy top guy on, you know, he's like one of the top actors in the world at that point. Like he was riding really high.
McConaissance, yep.
Yeah, big time. You had Channing Tatum, yep. you had Matt Bomer and Joe Mantegna.
Joe Manganiello.
That guy.
Mr. Vergara.
That's also very true.
But yeah, they were trying to recreate Sex and the City.
That's exactly
right? Like Sex and the City in terms of the marketing campaign. Because
yes.
Sex and the City was like, hey, girls, come to the show and get liquored up and have a good time, make it a girls'
night.
It
was the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Which is the plot of her show in Magic Mike 3. That's
right.
The,
yes.
Hey, girls, come out to the stodgy theater, but get liquored up and have a good time,
like,
female empowerment.
What irritates me, like, this the premise is ridiculous. Like we're going to, so there's a play in this Radigan Theater, which is the family name of her husband, right?
Yep.
And the bad guy from The Great Mouse Detective.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, there's a play that's very like it's a costume drama,
very
highbrow, stuffy, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that she closes it, even though it's very successful.
I like the line where the guy's like, "We're sold out every night. What are you doing?
We're competitive."
Yeah, she's trying to get back at her ex-husband.
Okay.
I mean, it's
okay.
That was a weird twist, though.
But like, I get it from a getting back at her husband standpoint.
Yeah.
Right, but what makes no sense is that she's like, and then what we're going to do is we're going to reopen the play, but we're going to replace it with Folger's Coffee and see if anybody notices, right? Like, we're going to replace it with this male strip show, and that people are just going to love it anyway. And that
is because she wanted to be about female empowerment.
No, but that's a good
point.
That's
ridiculous.
But then why invite? So the whole thing is they want the same people to come back to this show.
Right.
There's no mention that it's turning into a strip
right.
show.
She's like, I'm going to bring back people who love and are anticipating stuffy theater,
but
and give them a male strip show, and they will love it.
But when they
no,
when
they
all of
not.
The guests show up, the women are dressed like they're going to not. A stuffed shirt theater.
Right.
They're dressed
they're
like the they're,
club.
They're. That's exactly.
Yeah.
They're going to a strip show.
But
and I was like, so wait, how did they know to dress differently?
Well, the invites that they sent out were for, I thought was like that unicorns on the invites. I thought
no,
that,
it was like that. It was her eye. It was like is like the poster was like you know Isabel's whatever the fuck. Mm. It was
yeah.
Her
but they,
eyes.
They Kevin's right that they changed the title. They called it Revelation or something like that. And they added like unicorns and a bunch of other stuff.
Oh, they
but
did.
It was in the same style. It was in the same
aesthetic. Yeah, it was the same style.
But
I thought they
elements.
Did add other stuff to the invitations.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I get that's ridiculous, but I think at some point he's trying to balance the serious stuff that he wants to explore, but he's also trying to make a crowd pleasing because he knows the crowd that's going to come out to the movie. The one that came out that I saw at the theater. I mean, that's
sure.
the market.
And just make that movie. Like, that's what I'm saying.
But
like
then
this,
it would have been two and we'd be like, I don't know. I just think
I,
that would have been
I would have had more respect for that movie. It wouldn't have been for me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But like, I would have at least understood it.
This felt like, I agree
like
with you.
This makes no sense because like, on the one hand, they're saying, I'm going to put on something really bad to embarrass my husband, but also women are going to love it and it will be a raging success.
I don't
success.
Think she said I want to be very bad. She wanted to cancel
the
thing.
She never said that.
Yeah.
But she wants to embarrass her husband by,
well, just,
by tanking the show.
She doesn't want to tank the show. No. Just her messing with it.
Yeah,
messes
just her
with
changing
the family.
The theater,
but all this guy cares about is money. Like, if she replaces one incredibly successful thing with a different incredibly successful thing,
she owns it legally. She said that she got the theater, so the money isn't going to him
either
way.
So, but it's
But you're missing the. Hey, come on, Tom. You've seen movies. You know what tropes are. He is a stuffy guy. He's the prim and proper British guy who's like, we don't want to break tradition. Mommy doesn't want me to break from tradition, no matter if the show is successful or not. It's going to break from tradition. Like, that's the character.
Well, I think
beat he's
I think
playing.
The line is that she doesn't like the whole deal is negated if there's,
she like brings shame
to the family,
family
name.
Yes, correct.
And then that's what
which
this,
we find out in the third act, basically. I mean,
but if it yeah, like we find that out very late in the game. But also, if it's a hit, then she didn't bring shame.
I don't think how they
good
measure
luck,
it.
Because it's not
good
prim
luck,
and proper.
Good luck
it's,
making
it's,
that argument in court.
Yeah. You're talking about high art versus low art.
Good
That's
luck
what
making
this is
that
about.
Argument in court. Like
the movie is trying to make the argument for twofold. One, Salma Hayek had this religious experience that was probably mania.
Right.
Brought on by being dry humped by Channing Tatum. She wants other women who are shackled by the fetters of patriarchy to feel the freedom of a man grinding
in that
on
15
I would
minutes in that show.
I would,
she wants
I
the
would
magic
understand
of Magic
and agree,
Mike to go global.
I would understand and agree with everything about that if she was insane. Like if this movie, would acknowledge the fact that she's
crazy pants,
having
it
a
does.
Mental health breakdown.
It does.
Oh,
it just plays
no,
as a
it
joke.
Doesn't.
No,
it
doesn't.
Because it ends with the show is a hit and we're all winners
and we're together
and we stuck it to the man. And it's like I'm not even convinced that this husband is all that bad. Like. I mean,
the entire scene with the daughter, though, the daughter doesn't even call her
mom.
Okay,
hang on.
That's what that lunch reveal is.
The only thing we have to know about the affair with the assistant is what the crazy lady told us.
That's true. He never says anything about it.
We never see him with the assistant. We never, like, he doesn't even really say anything all that bad
about
her. And
also,
he goes over to the house, and she clearly has moved a stripper in with their teenage daughter.
Yeah,
and he's kind of chill about it.
He well,
like,
he does
what
say
about
he's like,
this
well,
guy
he does,
is that bad?
He does
closes
say like, the whole
this
thing
is
down
a little
because
inappropriate.
He closes the whole show down.
Yeah, he's not
and
chill about it. He closes the whole production
he sees
down.
Her and he says because of what you brought
but,
in with her daughter.
But he
to
yells
Tom,
at her.
But
he's
to
like,
Tom's
you brought
point.
This weirdo. He's like, I question your judgment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But to like, Tom's point is.
I think there's some projection.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think there might be a little bit. But. She has multiple instances with Mike where she's crazy.
Yeah. I heard Soderbergh probably wanted to explore this aspect, and they're like, "Okay, dude, should've. If you want to make this movie,
that would have been a good movie."
But I bet you they're like, "You want to end your Magic Mike trilogy 10 years later or whatever? You need to make this a little bit mainstream, so like you can delve into his business being shattered because of the pandemic. You know, your relationships ending, your friends being distant, and you feeling like you betrayed them and owe them money. You can explore all this stuff, but we are not going into a mental health." breakdown of this woman.
But,
we're going to empower women.
We're going to throw some.
I'll disagree though because I don't think you tell Steven Soderbergh at this point a damn thing about what he does.
No,
in
but
movies.
Here's the thing, Kevin. I think this like maybe it's because I just watched these movies again. I think this is akin to what all of these movies are. Like when he picks that the nurse, the kid's sister in the first movie, she's awful. She's an awful person. The second movie, she's not even in it, but she breaks up with him as he proposes to her on the beach. That's what Mike tells us. Then he ends up with Amber Heard, who is the worst, most negative person in that group of friends they meet.
Oh, I was like,
you
mean in real life or in general?
No, she is a horrible, negative, awful character. Part of Mike's toxic traits is that he is attracted to crazy women. That is his
part
of
that
his
movie.
Downfall.
I want to see and that movie.
Like, that is this movie.
But
and
it's not.
Ever works
they,
out.
They, but they live happily ever after.
And they play it for jokes.
Right.
They play
no,
every,
but,
so
but,
even
but,
when she's arguing with him about, no. She's like, hey, you're the creative director of this thing,
right?
But I'm going to do all the creative work for you. And he's just like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, so what I thought was going to happen is that she was going to be giving him all of these notes. She's going to be bringing in all of these things. And he was just going to be like, okay, okay, okay. And then when we get to the end,
it would be a different show.
It would be a complete, yeah. It would be his thing. Yeah. And also, I've only seen the first one. I've never seen the second one. And the first one was forever ago. Is there any like indication that he is like creatively, he wants to make his own show?
Well, he makes his own furniture.
He's always no, wanted but to make
he, furniture. He makes the show in the second one. He convinces them to get rid of all of their tried and true acts and their dance routine that they've already done. And he's like, if we're going to go out, we're going to go out in style.
So
and
he's Anna Kendrick from Pitch Perfect. Or
kind of. That second one is a Pitch Perfect movie, for sure.
Okay. Or Glee. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we're going to do Don't Stop Believing.
We're going to just make up a song on the spot and we'll win state.
No, they rehearse. They rehearse in Magic Mike XXL. Yeah, they get rid of all their costumes because he's like, we're playing these characters, but those aren't our passions. They get high off of ecstasy and they're like, let's figure out what our passions are.
Okay, so there is some background.
And then they have several days to rehearse a new routine, and then they go to the stripping convention. And
Florida then their drill instructor gets blown up and they have to do it all.
But he's very creative. I mean, he makes the furniture.
There's a precedent for him being able to put a show together.
Well, and he did. I mean, he crafted that whole 15-minute thing we see with Selma Hayek that gives her this revelation. So I mean, that's a big routine.
But there's a big difference. How many Britney Spears types figures have married or dated a backup dancer?
There's a big
dancer.
Difference between doing an improv one person thing in a giant
putting on a production.
Yeah.
Production.
Yeah, sure.
Well, the production looked, I mean, let's be honest, that play sucked.
But it was creative though. Still, like the things he came up with, he moved the whole room around, and so I get it.
He changed the stage.
You can say it's just dry humping or whatever, but like he was picking out things and he saw it in his mind. He's like, I'm going to go there. Like he choreographed it, and so that's to lead you in this movie and the story. She saw his genius of like, oh, that wasn't just put me in a chair and hump me. It was, oh, we're going to go to the window. I'm going to move this. We're going to go to the bar. I'm going to hang upside down. Like he did choreograph it.
He's like Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
And the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes where he's like,
That's where Selma Hayek
exactly how to get you wet.
And then Selma Hayek's like, well, I want people to experience this. I own a theater. We'll make a show and he can choreograph it. So it does kind of play out in the story.
Right.
That was very good.
I thought this was whatever.
But okay, you say in this movie there's hardly any stripping, dancing, choreography, whatever.
There's two big scenes.
There's the big dance at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's half of a really good dance on the bus that lasts about 45 seconds.
That
bus scene was really good, except it stopped like 45 seconds
in. That whole
I was like,
Edna,
why are we stopping
that
this?
Was weird.
Edna thing felt like the most Steven Soderbergh thing I've seen.
Yeah, and I liked that. Yep. And I liked that dance scene, and I was like, this is really good.
The
and
ending
different.
Was weird.
And then it just stops. All of a sudden, it turns into Birdman.
Yeah,
and it's
I was
over.
Like, ending
what
was
happened?
Really weird. I don't know what her fascination was with
Swan Lake.
Well, I know, but it's like, that was just a weird. But
and then
okay.
you get the montage of when they're picking out their dancers.
Yeah.
Because they're going to hire dancers, not strippers.
So they go to like the street artist, break dancing.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And then and then you basically
the montage
get
the
big montage at the end.
So I get it. And I'm not arguing.
And
then
Channing Tatum, of course, finally comes back. And that's the best.
That's the best dance
that
scene.
That dance scene in the rain.
Fantastic.
Or the fake
it's
rain.
Great.
That was great.
Yeah.
With the sliding around. That was great choreography.
That was great.
There's a level of, man, I feel old. When Channing Tatum takes the jeans off and he's wearing
knee pads.
And I was like, God dang it.
You can see through his pants in the first scene on the table. He's got knee pads under his.
Well, and I was wondering how in that scene they can dance on their feet but slide.
Maybe there's something on their shoes.
I don't know. I was just like, how are they not slipping? You know,
I was thinking the same thing. It looked amazing.
But that scene is great. That
ballet and
love it. Like that scene is really, really good. So here's my weirdest complaint about the whole movie.
Not enough pants off.
They don't take their pants off.
I thought it was very weird. A male review type thing.
It's a male, and he says to them, "Have you boys, you better prepare yourself because you're going to be naked in front of a room full of middle-aged, horny women.
They never go into banana hammocks. They never have.
They're always wearing pants.
And they wear pants the whole time.
I thought it was very odd for the setting for the show.
Actually, to Tom's point, is the entire, no pants, except for the ballet dancer whose ass cheeks are hanging out. I'm not arguing
for a movie that's supposedly about female empowerment.
That's what I'm saying.
She has the skimpiest outfit,
skin we see is from the only female dancer in the production.
But hey, Mike
I ain't mad at it, brother.
But Mike choreographed that dance, not Salma.
They're like, here's a little something for the husbands who got dragged.
Well, see, that's what I was thinking, right? Like, that's where you get
the female MC.
Well, you get the Salma Hayek. That opening scene is both for dudes and ladies.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Then you get the
female. It's a good scene. It is weird. Like, it's long, and if you're, like, uncomfortable.
It is very long.
Like, you know, but it's a good, like, the choreography of what they're trying to do. It's a good scene. You know?
When he jumps up on that, and I was like, do people have like fake pull up bars?
Rich
in their
people,
house?
Yeah.
And then like his pants just drop off. I was like, that was pretty good. That was a good little move right there. Well done.
Joe's like filing that away for Valentine's
Day. And mates.
Yeah, go home and try to be upside down.
My fuck, I dislocate my shoulder.
She told the story. Did you guys hear the story?
No.
So when they were doing that scene and he was upside down, Salma Hayek. He started like losing his grip upside down and he grabbed her pants or whatever, her dress or whatever. And then she was worried that she couldn't remember if she had underwear on or not. So he's like, cover your head, protect your head. I'm falling. She's like, no, no, no. And is holding on her pants because she was too worried about if she had underwear or not. And so like he was almost like fell on her head. And
the fact that she went, the fact that she went onto the set during that scene when that was happening, that underwear tells you everything.
or
the
could
chemistry
have.
Between these two.
Yeah. She's like, it's a jump ball. Maybe I have underwear on. Maybe I. That's
but yeah, I
Schrodinger's
think,
panties.
That, yeah, that's right. That opening scene and that closing scene, because that ballet dancer is also drop dead gorgeous.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So there are, and I was like, Steven Soderbergh knows what he's doing.
I think like, that in the first
both
two
those,
movies,
backloading the dancing so people leave happy.
Yes,
like it's like an action movie where it's like it's boring. Right. The last 20 minutes, all action, and you leave going.
But I
want
to go back to the first movie, which we both agree is excellent, and. You there's agree there's not that much dancing in this? There's not that much dancing in that
but
one.
But he made an interesting movie around not a lot of dancing. Here, he makes a bad movie around not a lot of dancing. So if you're going to make a bad movie, then you got to give me the dancing. But if you're going to make a good movie and you're bait and switching me on the dancing, like that, okay.
So here's, this is my, we're going back to the David Zaslav thing.
Yeah.
Where apparently the Disney Warner, not Disney, but the Warner Brothers Discovery thing is not happening. Like the merger.
No,
of the,
it is. They just, they're not getting rid of, they because they realize people still want their $5 a month reality TV. So he's leaving that app. They're not making you spend 15.
I got
Because they realize he's shooting himself in the foot. If you say, oh no, you can't spend five, you have to spend 15.
Right.
They're going to lose their asses.
Right.
They'd have to make three times as many customers on HBO Max, not going to happen. Three times a lot to break even.
Sure,
so
sure.
It was like, no, we'll give them their
$5 or whatever.
Whatever, Boy Islands and flip this house, whatever. I don't know what they have on there, but you know.
It makes me wonder how bad.
Boy Island, that's from Pinocchio.
I don't think that's a Pinocchio. I think you're thinking of the porn parody where the nose grows
it's
into
really,
something else.
Yeah, right.
It's a whole different thing.
Pinocchio.
Kevin, you don't find any redeeming value in this movie. I thought it was a heck of a lot of fun.
I think it's me.
I don't think it's good, but I think it's fun.
I think you can't see me behind this pole, which might be a good thing as we're talking. I don't think this movie was terrible, but I did leave feeling it lacked something, and I think it's the reasons to why Tom really didn't like it.
Lack quality.
But I did find redeeming value, but I agree. The story was so-so. The motivations were so-so. I agree. But I did like, I thought Channing Tatum was very good in the role.
I thought he was, I like Channing Tatum. He's charismatic. He's funny.
But there's a maturity to this Mike where Mike feels like he's 10 years removed from the first movie because he is.
Yeah.
And in the second movie, like the whole thing about relatability where he lost his business in the pandemic. A lot of people can relate to that. It was his dream. He had to give up on his dream that he sacrificed everything to start. And so I think that there was just a lot of, I mean, it was really interesting him having to go through that. And then the guilt, whether I agree with it or not, with the other dancers he owes money to, but he feels it. The character feels strongly that he has to pay them back.
I agree with Jason. Like this character is a bit of a martyr, right? And so like the building blocks for a good movie are here.
Yeah.
They just don't assemble them. It's not, they're not building blocks. It's Jenga.
But,
and the whole thing comes crashing down.
You knock one block out.
My favorite episodes of Real Spoilers as a multi-year listener is whenever Tom hates a movie. But I've never been in a position where he's hated a movie where I had to defend it. It's been the other way around. And I just, I want us to be on the same page, Tom. I just don't want this movie to hurt you anymore.
I, you know, honestly, like, I don't hate this movie in the way that, like, I hated The Whale.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
But, I like, it's frustrating because, like, the first movie's really good. The second movie is a cash grab, but I get what they're doing. And I also get that the first movie is this very serious, grounded thing. And you really, you can't move the ball forward realistically and leave it in the world of male dancing. So, right. Like, I get, and like, but male dancing are why people are going. So you gotta come up with some dumb reason. And so it's going to be a dumb movie, and it's not for me, and not everything has to be for me, and that's fine. But like, this one is like the worst of both movies to me.
This feels that when you said that this was for HBO Max, then it clicked,
which makes no sense as a business decision, because this movie is about
a hot property,
the group experience of people going on a girls night out.
I don't know.
Obviously,
why
there
they
are some boys who like these movies,
but they also have the Magic Mike live show now, which tours
right.
See, that's what
really? How much does Chippendales have to hate the fact that someone invented another male dance review brand name? Like, they've
cornered the market.
The
Thunder from Down Under.
Yeah.
Chippendales.
And now Magic Mike.
But Magic Mike eclipsed them all. Yeah. It was even real.
They're diluting the product.
Yeah. And you know, when it first came out, they were like, hey, great, this is reviving.
That's exactly it.
And then it's like,
the same thing.
I want
this, like, Succession style show about the behind the scenes of, like, a mafia esque.
No, I want
ruthless,
and that's a pitch, man.
Ruthless cutthroat behind the world.
They have the Chippendale Origin Prestige show with Kumail Nanjiani.
Do you know that story? I haven't watched that show, but I've seen the.
I don't know the story at all.
I don't know if the show's any good. The story is crazy good. And like, like, you need to like I said, I haven't watched the show itself, so I don't know if the show's any good, but I've seen the 2020 or Dateline that they've made
Tom
about it.
Tom watches all Chippendale material for the story.
I do a lot of reading the articles.
You don't want to know how much weight I gained just to go see the whale.
Is the root of this, Tom, that you don't like Magic Mike because you're actually in the pocket, you're in the pocket of deep
Big Chippendale.
Yeah. Big Chippendale.
Oh my gosh, this is a smear piece on Big Chippendale.
This is a smear. You're a Chippendale
you
shill.
Would see my
you're a shill
tux
for Chippendale.
Shirt.
No, not a tux.
No, just a bow tie.
Just a bow tie.
If he took off the hoodie, it's just a bow tie.
Yeah, you're a shill for the Chippendale industrial complex.
Tom wrote the skit for Patrick Swayze and Chris Farley.
Yeah,
that is one of the best SNL skits.
That's why he was so adamant that there had to be hot pants.
I can't believe they didn't
banana
pick Chris
hammocks.
Farley.
You were like, "There's no banana hammock. It's not real because you're big. You're funded by Big Chippendale."
I can't believe more women aren't leaving the theater mad that they left their pants on.
I agree.
Oh, the woman behind me when this movie ended, you're gonna have to censor this, Kevin. I apologize. So. Insert baka here. The woman behind me would end it. She was up a level above me because, again, I was
most women
by
are.
Nobody. I was in isolation, masked up. She goes, "That was so fucking hot." Just like that.
Oh my God.
And the whole row of seven or eight moms were like, "Oh my God."
But they
so
did the three, they did
loved
the three,
it.
The three women thing with the three dancers and swapped them around. Like, I think there's enough left of the imagination where still the target audience enjoys this movie. I thought it was an odd choice. I totally agree.
Especially if you're going to go with the hard R. And they're dropping F-bombs left and
it's
right.
It's an odd choice
No. I did the same thing. I was like, is this PG-13? And then I started paying and I'm like, oh no, there's lots of F-bombs.
Yeah, I still think the show gave the target audience enough to enjoy without, it's just a weird choice for whatever, I don't know the reason, but the dances are still seductive enough to
I can say is I hope one day, Jason and Kevin, I hope you two sons of bitches go to Broadway and you buy tickets to Hamilton, and you come out, they come out, and it's a male strip show, and then you have to love it. You have to love it. Like, I know you bought a ticket to Hamilton, but no, you're getting a dong shoved in your face, and you will fucking like it.
Because they wear pants.
I also hope that dong will be
wearing a powdered wig.
I look forward to that day happening. I hope Kevin and I are side by side, and as it happens,
what are you
I'll
doing?
Do you
have any time in your schedule this summer for a trip to New York?
I will reach over slowly, and I will grab Kevin's hand, and we will hold our hand like Thelma and Louise as those dongs go flying. Reveal S, you know, powered by Review STL. My boner will be powered by Review STL.
Man. Tom and I'd be like, you sons of bitches.
Be, I just picture the Yelp review now. That was so
You are in the pocket of Big Chippendale, and I am in the pocket of Big Review STL.
I think
all of my erections are sponsored by Review STL.
That's how we finally get that Blue Chew ad.
Yeah, that's right.
I think there were some things that they could have explored more, the mental health, like health the plot. Aspect. The butler, like there was a weird kind of unexplored thing there.
Not Coach Beard?
Yeah, right. I wanted more of Channing Tatum and the butler. Like those two guys, like together, I thought were really good.
But there was a plot. There was a plot of the butler feeling neglected that they just never addressed. There's one throwaway line.
Is that what that was? I'm not saying you're wrong, but
they
keep looking.
She keeps talking over him and not letting him speak.
Yeah,
and they
she's crazy.
Okay, but well, also are like rich or like looking down on him or disrespectful or whatever.
But he picked working for her over the husband,
right?
Because she has more balls, like that's
right?
What he
which
said.
Doesn't really whatever. But like, there's the scenes where they keep cutting back to him and he's very frustrated
by
her not letting him talk and being dismissed and all that, but he never has like the big throwdown, like are we supposed to believe that things are great, and they never address any of that tension. And then in the end, like he's just taking care of the daughter and everyone's happy. There's that unresolved conflict which I think they could have explored, which would have been interesting, of him being like, I quit, I'm not going to take your BS anymore, good luck figuring all your stuff out, and then they maybe have to win him back in the end.
Like, hey man, this thing doesn't work without him.
Can I say one
negative thing? I know we're going to be closing here
soon. I mean, I know Tom would hate to hear you say a negative thing about this movie. It would break his heart, but please.
Why does that daughter character even exist?
To narrate?
Why
she
is she the narrator of this movie? And is the narration from her novel?
I guess that's her novel.
I think I think that it became the novel, right? Like, I think
the daughter ends up writing a novel
about
a dude.
Written. Maybe the whole franchise has been written by her.
Is that like the reveal that like this is like she's going to end up writing Magic Mike's life story? Who cares? Who cares about Magic?
I feel
Mike?
That would have been crazy.
So here's my pitch for Magic Mike 4. Okay.
Magic Mike 4D.
Magic Mike 4. He's now morbidly obese and living by himself.
Oh, please.
This is the whale.
And he's insisting on everyone to read him the book that the stepdaughter wrote.
He's choreographing strip shows.
Where did you come up with this idea?
It's just I'm just riffing.
He's choreographing back. He's choreographing his shows via Zoom.
You would have loved The Whale if James Corden starred in it.
Oh,
did you hear about that?
God. I did.
That he was going to be the star of the movie?
It was going to be a different director, too, right?
It was Tom Ford. There Eternal Animals, your favorite. Yeah. So you would have really loved it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Are you guys making this up?
No. This is a real...
But, like, The Whale is finding all this critical acclaim, and James Corden has to come out and be like, you know, I was supposed to be in that role.
Yeah, of course he does, because he's a scumbag.
Come on, dude.
I hate it. Man, that guy is the worst. The worst.
Kevin, and actually all of you guys, you're all, well, except for Joe. Joe's not comfortable in his sexuality. But
I don't know if that's true at all.
Wow, he analyzes everyone on this show.
Yeah, if you could.
Glad I passed the test.
It made sense that Magic Mike would be, quote-unquote, famous in at-home male review entertainment in the Tampa, Florida area, that he would have developed a reputation of, hey, there's this hot guy, whatever.
Sure,
right.
Big fish, little pond. He's famous within his industry. That makes sense.
Yeah. That makes sense. It didn't make sense in XXL when Elizabeth Banks is introducing it to a crowd full of women from around the country who've come to the stripper convention, male stripper convention. And being like, ooh, the magic is back. He hasn't danced in 5 years. It's Magic Mike. And everybody goes nuts. It's like, why would
they
anybody
would know of him?
Know him in South Carolina or whatever.
Maybe
that makes sense.
It
makes even less sense. Right.
Maybe
like,
if you're following the male stripping industry enough to go to the male stripping convention.
Right, yeah, that's true.
That, you know.
Yeah, perhaps.
But this audience wouldn't know who he was from anybody.
No.
So the idea is she's like, oh, Magic Mike. And there's a fun pun of the mic is Magic Mike, and I don't know. I thought
that was kind of funny.
That was also, I thought it was horrible.
You didn't like the Magic Mike?
No.
And
his voiceover of this girl making wishes to a unicorn for guys to take their clothes off was like, she's like, we're going to reinvent the theater. We're going to invent what the theatrical experience is.
I thought the whole.
Jesus.
Yeah, like, but you're not, right?
No.
You just replaced it with something more lowbrow.
The movie needs to end with Mike having created a presentation or something that shows that he actually has some kind of creative genius. What he comes up with really is stupid. It's a very, the end show sucks. It's not, it's cheesy, it's goofy.
Well, we didn't really see it. I mean, it was just a montage. Like, we
enough
didn't actually
with the
see
MC,
it.
Yeah.
I've seen things like this very similar on Norwegian cruise lines. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah. Like,
I felt like a cruise show.
I went, when I was, we did a cruise last summer, and it was our first time on Norwegian cruise, which I enjoyed. My first non-Disney cruise as an adult, but so I was skeptical, but we had a great time. But one of the shows one night was like, it was some sort of dance show, and it wasn't like a male dance review, but it was, but the dancing and the sets, like, it really reminded me of the dance show. And we actually ended up leaving early because we're like, this is kind of boring. it was like cruise ship entertainment.
Yeah, now, I think if they're doing like a strip show, I think the cheese factor, it needs to be there. You know what
for
I mean?
For sure, but if we're supposed to believe
dance sequence at the end was great,
that rich people
that
are
they
gonna
bait and switched the people for the highbrow thing, yes, and that if you just give them a cheesy strip show, they're going to love it just as much. Like, that's ludicrous.
Sure, sure, sure.
The but show that he choreographed in XXL, I don't know if Kevin remembers this because he hates this movie.
I don't.
But the mirror, there's Ellen's dancer who just passed away is also in it. It was Switch or Stitch or whatever his name was.
Yeah,
and they do a mirror sequence where Channing Tatum's on one side and he's on the other side, and they do the entire routine like in reverse of each other with two women who
like
are
the
back
March
to back
in
the chair. Kind of Harpo, and it's great. It's really great. And they're on this big stage, and there's all these different set pieces, and Kevin Nash as Tarzan gets a set piece, and then you're like, oh, okay. If they had done that on that stage, you would have been like, minus the rain sequence with the ballerina, because that was good. But you'd be like, okay, that makes sense. He did a better Broadway style show in the West End in a stripper convention in North Carolina than he did in the movie where he's supposed to be doing a West End
in the
production.
Banquet room of a Holiday Inn Express.
Right? Yeah. It's like, wow.
I think they missed the mark for sure, but I do think this was kind of returning to the roots of the first one. I liked that it was less of a cash grab to me, and I thought explored some interesting things. I do think that we kind of wrote a better movie today, though.
As we tend to do on this show.
I do think that they could have explored different things and gone in depth with them. So I totally agree with what a little bit of what everyone's saying. But I don't know. I was happy that it wasn't like two, to me at least. But
yeah, it was. I mean, I just thought it was aggressively.
Did your showing open with the trailer for the movie?
A trailer that recapped the entire trilogy.
I was just like, yep, they showed you a trailer for the movie, and yep, I'm just like,
I'm already here.
You know that, right?
I think they
now,
it
did
by
you
accident
get
sometimes.
Did you get Salma Hayek?
I did. I got
top?
That too. Yeah. Where she wouldn't shut up, and he didn't get to say like one word the whole time.
Did they do that? Do you go to AMC?
No, I went to Marcus.
Oh, I went to Marcus too. I didn't get that. Okay.
I went to the very first showing. I went to the 5 because I had to be there. 5 o'clock on Thursday. Which, you know.
I think that was just because I went on Thursday as well. I think that was early pre-screening.
Oh, it was an early
extra thing that they did.
That was our treat.
Yeah, that was
treat.
At the draft house. You don't get any of that crap.
Yeah. So what did you get? What were your things?
So they're definitely leaning into Don't Knock at the Cabin Door. So it's the same pre-roll that I got for, which is fine. Like, I got to tell you, if that's what I have to put up with.
I know, but it would have been interesting for.
I did think the same thing. I was like, I wonder if they're going to have different stuff, but no.
It's not called Don't Knock at the Cabin Door, though, by the way.
Whatever it's called. don't do it. Yeah, we saw how it ended. Don't do it. Yeah. But no, it was just the same pre-roll that I got for Knock at the Cabin Door.
Gotcha.
Don't
actually you
door.
Have to knock
the green
door.
Door.
I
know
what's behind
is.
The green
door.
See, they could have played the Patrick Swayze, Chris Farley skit.
They could have.
They really could have pre-programmed.
Yeah, but I think
could have showed the big scene from the Full Monty.
That's true. That's true. There's. Yeah. I mean, I think that depending on what they kind of like what we do here, where it's like, okay, we're looking at the schedule, like that's going to be the big one.
Mm. Yeah,
I think that's what they double down on. Like next week, I think it'll be a completely different.
They didn't double down on limited release Magic Mike 3.
I walked into the theater, and the gal goes, "Well, And I was like, what's up? She's like, it's yours. I go, what's mine? She goes, the theater. And I was like, oh, cool.
You're really the only one there.
Legit the only one.
And I like, get so posters?
He's like, cool, I won't have to put a newspaper over my
lap.
That's
right, yeah. Like,
this crowd isn't going to the draft house.
What's that?
No.
Did you get a poster?
I did not.
I got a poster.
Oh. Is it a like a full-sized one?
He's been holding it up with one hand.
Yeah. No, that is true. This is not the...
Like, yeah. This is not
also,
what the crowd
I
is.
Also saw it at like 11:50 on a Friday morning.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know.
Yeah.
Well, so you were just a weirdo who showed up before lunch to see a male stripping
movie. I was,
movie.
Yeah, right. I did look at the theater and I was like, oh, cool. Like, I'm it's only a day early. Like, I'll just pick that one right there.
They're like, this guy better buy a lot of concessions. Yeah. Someone came in and waited on you during this?
Yeah.
Did you buy anything?
Yeah.
Would you like... Sir, would you like butter on your popcorn, or will you be making your own?
I'll be making my own. Thank you very much.
Sir, we have Jergens or Aquaphor.
Aquaphor is preferable, like to... please. Unscented, if you can. Thank you.
Nice to get a little exfoliation in while I'm multitasking.
Yeah, right.
I can't imagine ordering like breakfast chicken tenders at an Alamo Draft
House. Exactly what I got.
There's eggs on top of the chicken tenders.
with 11 a.m.
mother and child reunion.
That was 11:50.
To so watch this movie.
It was
like,
close
this movie
to
at 11 a.m. on a Friday would suck. So, yeah. This is a like after 7 p.m. movie with a bunch of middle-aged women.
Yes,
having
that's
a good time.
I absolutely believe that.
Yeah.
But not what I got.
So, anyway, I guess that's it for this one. We can all agree this movie was bad.
I wouldn't watch this one again.
No.
I mean,
I've never watched the first Magic Mike again, but I would.
Yeah.
But
I would,
but the other ones no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And Jason, where can they find you and your wares?
On Twitter for now, at Binge Movies. On Instagram, at Binge Movies Lives. Binge Movies is the parodiest to the greatest that is Real Spoilers. From myth to laughter, that's what we do. And you can check us out on wherever you find podcasts.
You just did a Police Academy series.
Yes, in the not too distant future, a brand new season's going to start, and it's going to be Police Academy with fake host of Real Spoilers, Matt F. Basler.
I can't wait to listen to that.
I watched a movie. I can't remember what it was called, but it was a documentary of sorts with Dana Gould and Bobcat Goldthwait.
Okay.
And they were on their way to somewhere together and they got in a car wreck. And so it's them telling that story and then also on stage simultaneously doing stand up. And Bobcat Goldthwait told a story where he said TMZ asked him with all the reboots of movies,
oh, Jesus,
why isn't there a Police Academy reboot? And he's like, well, because the stars of the movie keep killing civilians.
Oh my God.
Wow.
And then he said that he got a lot of heat because apparently those movies are very popular with Trump supporters.
That tracks.
And I'm like, but why? Like if you tried to make Police Academy today, people would lose their about you besmirching the police. The same people that would embrace that are Smokey and the Bandit, right? And then Bobcat said that he got in more trouble because they asked him again about Police Academy, and he was like, I'm hoping they do a remake, but do it like 21 Jump Street and make it a comedy.
That's funny. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So, anyway, I just thought I would share those two little
How many was he in?
I think he was in
like two or three.
Three and four, I think. And then he bails, I think. Yeah,
Good for him.
Yeah. But anyway, and you can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, do all the things, and don't forget our Patreon. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Gaz refuses to perform if men are in the audience. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you.
Thank you. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.